Amen. All right. Thank you, Craig. I've got some lessons here, Ashley. So here's today's lesson for those that don't have it. And then here is next week's lesson. We'll see how far we get today and see if we can cram in lesson 12, which would be the final lesson next week as well, or at least see how far we could get into it. The last lesson, lesson 12, even though it's got quite a few chapters, I don't think we'll have as much information as some of these previous lessons.
I have to have 9, I think.
All right. So as I look around, I think most people know what we're studying. We are near the end of the book of Genesis. So this is our first deep dive into the scriptures. We've done the overview where we've divided the scriptures up into 17 time periods to help give us context of where all the events occur and to understand what happens where in the scriptures. And then we went back and we gave scriptural boundaries to that so that not only do we see the timeline, but now we see where at in the scriptures those periods occur. This time we're going through the deep dive with Genesis, and we, at least I have learned quite a bit, a little bit deeper of what we can see with stories that we were all pretty much familiar with. But I think hopefully by the time we get done, you'll have been able to get something a little deeper out of it than maybe you had going into it. Let's look here. So we have the review there, and how many time periods are there in Genesis? 4, and they are
flood, scattering of the people.
Yeah. So we got those 4 time periods in terms of the greatest, well, in terms of the greatest amount of time covered, which period is that?
Before the flood.
But in terms of the greatest amount of scripture coverage, that would be the patriarchs. Yeah, so when we look here, we've got 1,650 years that occur before the flood. So the earth is about 6,000 years old. So that's a major chunk of the history of the earth. And that occurs within how many chapters? Yeah, 5, 6 chapters right there. Yeah, and then we get to the flood. It covers a few chapters. Scattering of the people is which chapter? 11. And one really easy way to remember that that's chapter 11 is because what is chapter 12? The promises to Abraham, which start off our time period of the patriarchs. Now, does this mean that this is the only time? Because when we think of the patriarchal time period, we call it this because of what? God spoke to the fathers. So is this the only time that God spoke to the heads of the household?
No,
it's not. In fact, we know he was speaking to Noah up here. We saw that he spoke to Cain, spoke to Adam. So, did I say something?
Job,
yeah. So we see that God was speaking to people before that, but we have divided it up here into this being the patriarchal age. And what's one reason that we talked about saying that this one might be a little special here? I mean, it doesn't call it out as special in the Bible for this, but why we as today's people might divide this, start this as the patriarchal age. You might not have any idea where I'm going. But here is where the promise was given to Abraham. So this is when the promise starts. And then we see and we read a lot of this family line, right? We read a lot of Abraham. We read somewhat less of Isaac. And then we read a lot of Jacob. And we read a lot of Joseph. A lot of times we don't think of Joseph as being one of the patriarchs. But he's in this patriarchal time period. And did God speak to him? We know he at least interpreted dreams for him, so it's fine to put him in this category. So here starts the lineage of who?
Abraham.
Well, it starts before that, but the promise starts here. And who comes out of this lineage?
Jesus.
In fact, he is one of the promises, right? And that's the promise that affects us, and that all the world would be blessed through Abraham. We are over in this little area right here right now because Joseph has been born. In fact, we are going to start really a focus on Joseph this week. So we haven't focused on Joseph yet, but we are on our last patriarch that we're going to focus on. I told you I'd flesh this out a little more. What I did, we'll see later, is I kind of just fleshed out the life of Joseph a little bit more because it starts to get crowded. So you've got one with the life of Abraham with some of the events. Remember, there's not a whole lot of events in Isaac's. It might make sense, and I'll look into it, seeing to flesh out Jacob's a little bit more because we do read a lot about Jacob and see where events happened in here. But today we're going to see where we get that Jacob was about 91 when Joseph was born, because it doesn't call that out in the scriptures. A lot of times it'll say, so-and-so was this old when this person was born. It doesn't call that out, but we can get this age fairly easily. And we see some of the events, and so we'll delve into that a little bit more today. And so with that much of review, like I said, we're going to focus on Joseph. Actually, we're going to take a pause in chapter 38, look at Judah, and then we'll go back into the story of Joseph. And if we get done, some of these questions are fairly quick, we're going to move right into lesson 11. And I know I just gave you that and had it emailed yesterday. I don't know if you've gotten it yet. I don't check my email too much. But let's just start right off. Why did Joseph's brothers hate him?
Because
he was the favorite kid. Okay, so Patricia, why was he the favorite kid?
He received a coat of many colors.
Well, so he did receive the coat of many colors. I'd say that's part of being the favorite kid. His mom, yeah. So if we think back, give me a quick, elevator speech here, Gary, of what makes his mom so special.
She was the one that he really wanted. And I hate to say it this way, really loved, because I think he loved both.
In a different way, at least, though, because the scripture calls out Leah as being unloved, but I know as we go through, we see a relationship there.
There is, but his whole emphasis of going and working was to get Joseph's mom.
Yeah, that was... Jacob wanted Rachel, and she finally had Joseph. So Joseph was the favorite. Any other reasons that his brothers might hate him?
He was a tattletale.
Okay, I'm gonna write that because that was such an eloquent way of saying it. Tattletale. Yeah. So Barry, explain that.
Well, it says when he was 17. He told on his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah.
Yeah, so he was out in the field with them, shepherding the sheep, however you shepherd sheep, right? But they must have been messing around. But yeah, so the sons of the two handmaids, he brought a bad report back to his father on those. Okay, anything else?
His dreams,
yeah. So Joseph had some dreams, and in those dreams we're gonna go into them a little deeper, but just the real quick overview, Emily, what about those dreams?
Just that Wednesday his brothers would bow down to him.
Yeah, I mean, you can imagine they already don't like him because he's the favorite child. His dad's given him special gifts like this really cool coat. And now he says, hey, you want to hear my dream? You're going to bow down to me. So, yeah, you can imagine they don't like him very well. I think we covered all of these. So they, when they saw that they that their father loved him, they hated and could not even speak peaceably to him. So that's a big deal there. As Barry said, the tattletale portion, he gets this special coat. Now, it doesn't say that they hated him more because of the coat, but I can't imagine that was something that made them feel good. And then when they told him of his dreams, it says they hated him even more.
And in the scriptures, they end up bound down to him.
Oh, yeah. In fact, we will get to that in lesson 11. Okay, so these two dreams, now these become important pieces. So let's describe the dreams. He had two of them, right? What's the first one? Okay. Harvesting sheaves, and what happens? Yeah. So the brothers, I don't know why I'm bothering to write this down because it's just taking longer. Brothers, sheaves, bow. Okay. So it's you gather up the wheat and you tie them up, and there's a big sheaf of wheat.
Okay.
So here he tells them, and they hate him even more going back. So then he has another dream. So he keeps quiet on this one, right? No, he's like, this one's even better. And why is it better? The sun and the moon and the 11 stars bow down to Joseph at this point. So he didn't really learn his lesson of, my brothers don't like me much. Maybe I'll just keep this to myself. In fact, he goes and tells his brothers. He tells his father. And what's Israel or Jacob's reaction? He rebukes him. And this is his favorite child. So what does he say when he rebukes him?
He holds back. He doesn't really share that necessarily.
Yeah. It's like, it's like, and he even says, what, am I and your mother going to bow down to you? And now it says something, gives a little bit different perspective on his brothers. In the past it says that they hated him. What does it say this time? They were jealous. They envied him. Which, you can imagine, right? You have your father and he's giving all this special attention to one child. And not only that, you probably see that your father is giving special attention, I'll get you, Ben, special attention not only to Joseph, but to, we're going to get into this part. But anyways, they've seen in the past where Joseph's mom got more attention than their mom. Right. In fact, remember what happened when they were going to meet Esau? Well, I don't know if he's going to kill us, so this is what we're going to do. We're going to put the handmaids and their children up front, and then we'll put Leah and her children, and then we'll keep Rachel and Joseph in the back. Right? So you can imagine what you might think of. Well, I wish my dad cared for me as much as he cares for them. So that's the reaction. So he rebuked them. They envied him. And these are the dreams. So here is the big question. If you hadn't thought about this before, and hopefully you saw as you're reading through this, like, oh, wait a minute. This isn't, it's not terribly important, but you might run into somebody that say, hey, the scriptures just contradict itself. And so this is one I think is worth being prepared for. And we don't have the answer. I'll just give you that up front. But any thoughts about this? First of all, do you think he had the dream before or after Rachel died? So we've got an after. I could start doing the tallies. So if he had the dream after Rachel died, what do you say supports that?
When he dreams, he saw the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars. 11 being the total number of his brothers. That would include the youngest brother who, when he was born, Rachel died in childbirth, wouldn't it? The thing about the sun and moon is tricky because it's like, well, how's his mom there bowing down to him? But he could have considered Leah as his mother at that point.
Right. Were you guys able to hear Bonnie with that? So when she reads the second dream, it says the 11 stars bow down. Well, that's in reference to his brothers. And for there to be 11 brothers, that means Benjamin already has to be born. But we know Rachel died in childbirth. So then the tricky part or the sticky part at that is, well, Rachel, if Benjamin's alive, then Rachel's dead. And the moon bowing down and Israel or Jacob saying, shall I and your mother bow down to you as well? So we've got to be able to deal with both of those. Any other thoughts or reasons why it might be one or the other? Rosa?
Well, remember these are dreams from God. Could that have been prophetic that the 11 brothers would bow down?
Right. Okay. So let's jump into that. So let's say it's before Rachel dies. Then it very much well could be that the 11th sheaf is Benjamin, but it's a prophecy. It's prophetic in saying that there will be another child and that child will bow down as well. Or if it's after Rachel died, it could be like Bonnie said, and it could be referencing Leah now saying, well, your mother, Leah, like your stepmother, is the one who Isaac is referring, or Isaac, we haven't done that in a while, and Israel is referring to. Okay. Any other thoughts? Yes, Lisa.
You know, I believe that Joseph is getting a bad rap here. And the reason I'm saying that, first of all, he was a young man, okay? And God did not tell him not to tell. When Jesus was on his ministry here on earth, he would say, don't tell anyone yet about me and what I have done for you. God did not tell Joseph that. So he had the right to tell people, and he told his family. He didn't get out on the street corner and talk about, oh, look at me. So I believe we, you know, it's just, you're being tough on Joseph. Joseph was a young man, he's a kid, and he was expressing something that he was excited about. Who gets that kind of information and wouldn't tell somebody at that age?
Right. No. Yeah, Lisa, don't take the way I'm saying it to mean that he was in it, had the same attitude that his father did. So remember, his father, when he had a lot of growing to do. You're right. Isaac was young, and that's just kind of my way of saying, hey, you didn't learn his lesson, you know. But I agree. I don't see any issue with what he's doing here. He gets these dreams, and he does say them. Now, back when his father was young, his father did some things that he really needed to mature, and we talked about how his time in Haran and the difficulties that he faced there really, I think, helped mature him. Go ahead, Ben.
Just going along with that, kind of what Lisa was saying, to that if he did not share those, you know, dreams, it really would not have meant as much later, I guess, and that really added to the effect. You know, all of them remembered these dreams later, whenever he is, you know, the second command of Egypt, and they are bowing, and they're like, oh.
Right, right.
But if he had kept it to himself, you know, I mean, it still would have been impressive and significant, but I think the prophetic part of it was a real, ended up being a real impact. Although at the time, maybe not
why. Right, but it did set in plan of how, or set in motion of how Joseph's going to get there. I mean, that's another tipping point of the, you know, I kind of think of it as a tipping point because of what they say when he's coming to get them. So yeah, I think that's a good point, Ben.
I think then, well, we're going to get into that shortly, but where they sell him.
Right.
Wouldn't happen.
Right.
It wouldn't have been.
That's, so they do make the comment, and we'll see, that they say, you know, when he's coming, they conspire against him, but they say, look, here's that dreamer. So it kind of looks like that was maybe another a piece that kind of pushed him over the edge. Go ahead, Rob.
One point that would just help you to understand that Rachel is dead at the time of these dreams is there's no indication that Joseph spoke to his mom. It says he spoke to his father, he spoke to his brothers, but she's not there.
Yeah.
In that chapter.
Yeah, in fact, and one of them that I don't have on there, but I don't hold it to be very strong evidence, but one that I did read was, boy, when Israel thinks he's dead, we don't see any mention of Rachel mourning. Well, I don't know that that's a good evidence, but that's another possibility. So I think we got most of these. These are some things you might run into. So people say, well, support for before Rachel died. And that's where it says, shall your mother bow down? Joseph was called the son of Israel's old age. And so some people have said, well, wouldn't Benjamin have been called the son of his old age because Benjamin was younger? In Genesis 44, they refer to Benjamin as the lad, so maybe indicating he was still very young. But it's a little bit different that coming of age than we have now. And then it says Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, and why would he have loved Joseph more than Benjamin? Because Benjamin also came from Rachel. So those are some things that people will use to say that Rachel hadn't died yet. When we look at the timeline, I'm going to end up on the other side. Support for after Rachel died. Well, here we have Joseph dreams of the 11 stars bowing down. So that refers to his brothers. And then it appears that Benjamin, when we get to chapter 46, has 10 children when he comes to Egypt. And we don't know how many wives he had. But when we look at the ages, that still seems, 10 seems a bit much to fit in there. So things we've got to reconcile. Then, if he has the dream before Rachel died, then the 11th star would need to be prophetic. If he has the dreams after Rachel died, then the mother could have referred to Leah as a stepmother. It didn't necessarily have to, but that's a possibility. So we've got those. So let's look a little bit at a timeline. We start off, we could go to Genesis 37:2, and this is what Barry referred to, so we can get some anchor points here. So Joseph was 17 when he gave a bad report of his brothers to his father. He was 30 when he interpreted Pharaoh's dreams. Okay, so we're going to find that out in Genesis 41. How long was he in prison? And I know we haven't got there yet, but you might remember. At least 2 years, because he stays in there for 2 years after the butler forgets about him. So this really, we could back up to 28 then, so we could get another time hack. So somewhere in between here, Joseph has his dreams and then he's sold. So between 17 and 28, although I think it's got to be younger than 28 just because of the events that transpire. Most people seem to think it's closer to 17, but we're not given that. So Joseph was about 39 when Israel came to Egypt, and Jacob came to Egypt. So we read in Genesis 45 that there were 5 years of famine left. The famine start, or the years of plenty were to start right away. So 37 years, that gives you 37 plus two of the famine years, gives him to be about 39. And then we can read here that Israel was 130 when he came to Egypt, and he died at 147. He lived there for 17 years. So this puts Jacob about 91 when Joseph was born. So when you see places where it says Jacob was 91 when Joseph was born, this is how that number is arrived at. Now, I mean, it's within a year on either side probably. So about 91. Now, let's go back in time. So after Joseph's birth, Jacob asked to be sent away. So this was right after, and when he wants to be sent away, that's right after the 14 years, right? He served 7 years for Rachel and got Leah, then got Rachel after a week, and served another 7 years, and then he wanted to be sent away. This was right after Joseph was born, but Laban convinced him to stay, and he stayed another 6 years. So that means Joseph was about six when Jacob and his family leave Haran. In Genesis 30 and 31, we can read about that. So here we have some time points in the life of Joseph. And he dies at 110 out here. So it appears here, and we'll get to this, that he comes to Egypt with 10 sons. Now, it's giving genealogies and stuff when you read it, but the context of everything sure appears like these are, it says a couple times, these are the people that came. So we'll delve into that a little more as to whether it's just a genealogy or whether it's the actual people that came. and we can do like some counting, and we can arrive at pretty much the right answer with these 10 sons. So he looks like he comes to with 10 sons, but we don't know how many wives he had. You know, if he had 10 wives, boom, 10 sons all at once. I don't know. But a lot of things happen between Joseph being 6 and then him going into slavery or having the dreams, right? So they leave Haran. They go to Mahanaim. That's the camp of the angels. Peniel, that's where he wrestled. This happens really quick, right? But then he goes to Succoth, and he builds a house there, and he builds barns for his cattle. So we get the impression that he stays there for a while because he built a house and he built the booths for the cattle. After some amount of time, he goes and he moves to Shechem and he buys land there. Again, we don't know how long he stays, but he's bought land. So you get the impression he might have stayed there for a while. And then he goes to Bethel. So God tells him to go to Bethel. And this is where he finally puts away the idols, right? And then they live there for some period of time. And then they go from Bethel to Ephrath or Bethlehem. And this is where Rachel dies on this journey. So, you know, there's a lot of things that have happened here. So it's, can that all fit in there? Well, when we calculate now some ages from these anchor points and when Benjamin comes to Egypt, if Rachel was still alive when Joseph had these dreams, Benjamin's max age would be about 22 years old with 10 sons. So that, I mean, to me, even if he had a lot of wives, it seems like, yeah, that's probably not the case. If Rachel had already died, then Benjamin could have been up to about 33 years. Now, it's likely less because of all of this that we just read, right? So it's got to be less than 33 years, but he's got a bit more time to have these children when he comes. And so when I read it, then I would say the reference to the moon bowing down is likely a reference to Leah being a stepmother for Benjamin. And so I wanted to go through all of that. So when somebody says, look, you guys believe the Bible, and here it's inconsistent within a few chapters, you can say, well, no, it's not. There's some possibilities, and this is kind of, we worked through those. We're not given the answer. I lean towards Rachel had died and Benjamin was alive. And we had, you know, Joseph had already been called out as being special from his birth because that was Rachel's firstborn. Any other comments on that? I probably beat that down enough. Okay. So, he has the dreams. Now we go into a new chapter in Joseph's life, right? So what happens here?
His father sends him out to find his brothers. His brothers conspire. They want to kill him. Reuben says no. They throw him in a pit, and they are having dinner and deciding what to do with them. They see some Ishmaelites, and they're like, ah, we'll sell them to him. And his other brother says, yeah, we shouldn't kill him, just sell him.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's good. So, and then they sell him. And then who comes after? Who comes later? Right after that? Who comes back and says, oh no? Reuben, right? Reuben was going to actually bring him back to his father. I don't know if it had something to do with being the oldest child and, okay, we can't do this. You know, Reuben has already hurt his dad. Remember, there was like the one or two verses with his dad's handmaid, so maybe he's feeling bad about this. I don't know. But here he is, or maybe he just cares for the life of his brother. I don't know. But he does that. So then... what's that?
This is called sibling rivalry.
Well, this is a bit extreme of sibling rivalry. I wouldn't want to grow up in that household. So now we go back and we've got to tell Jacob or Israel, right? So what do they do? Yeah, so they kill a goat. I was going to put they kill a kid because it calls it out, but a kid goat, right? And they dip it in the blood. And then how do they approach Jacob? I find this interesting.
They ask him if if he recognizes the
coat. Yeah, it's not like, hey, we found your son's coat. We think this happens. It's like, oh, hey, Dad, could this possibly be your son's coat? You know, and then they don't even give anything as to, well, maybe he was eaten by beasts or killed by beasts. It was, you know, let him come to that conclusion. And so then he, you know, of course, comes to that conclusion. So, yeah, so the brothers are up at Shechem, tells them to go there. I mean, Barry covered this really good. We get a little detail here that it really doesn't matter, but Joseph goes to Shechem. He meets a man that tells him his brothers went to Dothan. They conspire to kill him when he's afar off. And I don't have it here, but this is where, going back to talking about the dreams, they say, oh, look, here comes this dreamer. Let's get rid of him. Right, so they reference those dreams. Now they already hated him, and then they referenced the dreams. So definitely didn't take away from their love. But Reuben's like, no, we can't do this. So let's put him in this pit, and he planned to deliver Joseph back. So we got to get him in this pit so that the brothers can calm down, and then I'll deliver them back. We don't know where Reuben goes, but Reuben is apparently not with the rest of the brothers. So there, he's in this pit, and it calls out with no water. So I think it's like a well, a dried up. But they're eating. So the brothers are eating. They see the Midianite traders coming, or the Ishmaelites, and you know they're Midianites. They sell him for 20 shekels of silver. And they take him to Egypt. Then Reuben comes, and he tears his clothes. He's like, we have really messed up here. You know, he was planning on delivering Joseph, and now Joseph is gone. I mean, you're not going to get him back at this point. So it's like, what are we going to do? And so they do the plan here. And Jacob, you know, he concluded that an animal killed Joseph, right? And, you know, he tears his clothes, puts on sackcloth, and mourns for many days. And they tried to comfort him, but he wouldn't be comforted. Yeah, you have something, Bunny?
We get pictures here of some of the brothers, Reuben, Judah, and Joseph. And this is the first time we're really introduced to Judah specifically. And he's one who's like, hey, we can make some money out of this.
Yeah.
And he comes up with this plan that not only can we get rid of our problem, but we can make some money. So that's our introduction to Judah. By the end of the story, he's completely changed. So the next several chapters are, in a way, sneakily, as much about Judah as they are about Joseph.
Yeah, so that's a good point. And in fact, I wanted to call that out, and I'd forgotten. You guys remember Kevin Engel, right? The Engels? I don't know if you remember. He gave a Wednesday night talk on Judah, and I found it fascinating. But he starts off, and he talks about this. This is, whose plan was it to sell him? That was Judah's plan. And we go through, we see this incident with Tamar. We see Judah is not like this fine upstanding brother, you know, not even like Reuben. But by the end, and we won't get there today, but we see that Judah is changed. And we'll see that Judah is offering himself up. So yeah, that's a very good point. We see the progression of Judah throughout this story as well. What's maybe one reason we see a little bit of Judah being called out? Yeah, the lineage of Christ. He comes through the line of Judah. Okay, so Joseph's taken to Egypt, and he's sold to Potiphar, who is an officer of Pharaoh and captain of the guard. And then we pause, right? We say, well, no, we go to a map, because we can find a map. So here's Bethel. This is on the way from Bethel. Well, let's see. So Jacob came to live in Mamre here, but Bethel, they go from Bethel to Bethlehem. This is back with Jacob before Benjamin was born. On this route is where Benjamin's born and Rachel dies. And then Jacob, it says, goes to Mamre. This is about the end of Isaac's life. And then it says that he dwells where his father was a stranger. So we get the impression he probably stayed around in Mamre or Hebron. Shechem is up here. So, they were tending their flocks quite a ways away. So Joseph comes up here. He meets the man that says they went to Dothan. Dothan, they get to Dothan, and then he gets off to Egypt there. But now we pause, and we go and we focus on Judah. So we see this, that Judah wants to sell him. And, here's another story I think we've heard before, but give me the overview of this story.
Judah gets married and has three sons.
Okay, Judah gets married, has three sons, and the sons are... Okay, so he gets married to a Canaanite, right? In fact, I think her name was Shua. Three sons. And then what happens? Okay, before he was killed, though, what did Judah give to his son or take for his son? Different life, right? But yeah, a wife, and her name was Tamar. And then, Rosa, what happened to Ur?
The first son there, Ur, got killed.
Yeah, so he was very wicked, so wicked that God killed him, right? So he's, as we would write in when a term goes to zero, he dies. So then what does Judah then tell his second son?
Marry her.
And what's the reason? Is it to take care of Tamar?
No. The firstborn son will then be the oldest brother's child.
Yeah. So he is to again, then Tamar, he gets Tamar. And the firstborn then would be raising up an heir to Ur instead of him. So does he like that idea? No, and we read about how he purposefully does not raise up the heir. So then God is displeased, and what happens? He goes away. And so at this point, the third son is not old enough to marry. And so what does Judah promise?
That he will give Sheba to Tamar.
Yeah, and so what does he tell Tamar to do in the meantime? Yeah, go back, live as a widow in your father's house. Okay, so we're set there, we're waiting. Some time passes, and during that time, what happens to Shua?
She dies
too. And so now we've got Judah going to visit some friends that were up near where his sheep were being sheared. And at this point, how old is Shela or whatever?
Grown up.
He's grown up. We don't know how old he is, but he's of age where he could take a wife. And so what happens? There's kind of the crux of the whole story here.
Well, she sees him and realizes Judah has not fulfilled his promise to her. So she's going to take matters into her own hand to get an heir for Judah's house by any means necessary.
By any means necessary. I know. I mean, it's not quite the same as Lot and his daughters, but it's similar. So what does she dress as?
Harlot.
Dresses a harlot. She puts the mask or a mask. She covers her face, veil, and then, but she's smart, right? Because she knows what's going to happen if she doesn't. What does she require of Judah? So she propositions Judah, and he's like, okay. And they agree on a goat. But he doesn't have the goat with him. I mean, you don't carry your goat with you everywhere you go. So what does she require as a pledge? Or what does she ask for as a pledge? Staff and his signet and cord. Okay, so the event happens, and he leaves. So she then conceives, right? And so Judah then, you know, he wants to get his staff and his signet and cord back, or fulfill his end of the bargain. So he sends the goat with his friend, the Adullamite, right? And his friend gets there, and what does he find? Can't find her. And in fact, he asks about her, and what do they say? Yeah, there's no harlot that's here. And then they say, but here's some interesting news. What's the interesting news? Tamar's with child. And so and they say she's played the harlot. She's with child. And so Judah...
Burner.
Yeah. So you think of what he has done. You think of what he has not fulfilled his promise. And he still feels like he's got ownership over her, right? And so this is not right what she did. Burner. And so she comes out and she says, okay, but I just want you to know who the father is. And so who does she say the father is? Yeah, but she doesn't say, you are the father. She says, the father is, the owner of this staff. And then Judah's like, oh. Yeah, right. So Judah says, who was more righteous there? Tamar, yeah. And then that event, it says, never happened again. So I think maybe this is part of a learning event for Judah, as we see, you know, this growing that, hey, you have got to start thinking about others other than yourself, kind of like his father had to go through as well, right? So I think we covered all of this. Tamar conceives. 3 months later, she plays the harlot, you know, told that she played the harlot. So what about, what's notable about Perez? So she has twins. And what's notable about Perez?
Christ
lineage, yeah. Now, was Perez the firstborn or the secondborn? So he's the first all the way out. I mean, I've never heard of this happening, but apparently the first Zara's arm comes out, and for whatever reason, the nursemaid ties a scarlet thread around his arm, around his hand, and he pulls back in, and then Perez comes out, and they're all shocked. So it's an interesting story there. I remember as a kid kind of getting that story confused with Jacob and Esau, because there's this rivalry between Jacob and Esau, and oh, that had to have been the cord, but it's actually here with Tamar and Perez and Zerah. Perez is in the genealogy of Jesus here. Okay, let's. I think we can cover the rest of this so that we at least are on lesson 11 next time. So he comes to Potiphar. How does he rise to be overseer? And there's one real quick and easy answer. God's with him. Yeah. So the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man. Joseph's master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord... This right here reminds me of his dad in Haran, right? Laban recognizes that he has become wealthy because of Jacob, and that is because the Lord is with Jacob, and he recognizes that. So does Potiphar. He finds favor in Potiphar's sight, and he becomes overseer over all that he had, and he put all that's in care. Yeah, so similar to how God blessed Jacob when he was in Haran. So how then did Jacob end up in prison? Joseph end up in prison? They got the same first letter, the same first sound.
Potiphar's wife lies about the situation, and so they throw.
Yeah, so Joseph was handsome. Potiphar's wife desired him. He refused. She did this day by day. And so finally, one time, there's no other men in the house. She grabs his garment. He runs and leaves, and the garment stays. And so she's like, fine, you're not going to do what I want, then you're going to pay the consequence. So she calls out, lies, says that he tried to lie with her, is how it puts it. And then she tells that to Potiphar. Potiphar comes home and becomes angry, as you can imagine, and throws Joseph in prison. Real quick, if you've got, I only pulled up two of these, and I think we could go into a deeper study here, but what are a couple things that we can learn about sin and temptation from this incident?
Run from it.
Yeah, if all else fails, flee. I mean, if you're in a situation where you see that you are not, you're crumbling, just get out of there. Right, that might be the solution. You put yourself in that position, you might need to just get out. Go ahead, Lisa.
But once again, you're making the assumption that Joseph was tempted. It never said that. It says she was after him. He was not tempted. He ran.
So, Okay, so okay, I'll take that. It does not say whether Joseph was tempted or not, but I still think that we could take that as an application. That if you are in a situation where for most of the world that would be a temptation, then get out of Dodge. I think that that's good. You're right. It doesn't say whether he was tempted or not.
It shows you other people's sins. Affect your life.
Other people's sins can affect your life. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead, Emily.
I think it shows, too, that even though the Lord could be with you, you could still suffer accusations.
Right. And in fact, we saw that here. Remember Cody LaChapelle? He was going through a situation because he was faithful to God, and he was going through troubles because of that.
And when Joseph is telling Potiphar's wife why this was wrong, he says, how can I do this great wickedness of sin against God? He recognizes that this would not just be a matter against Potiphar and against Potiphar's wife. This would be against God.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So those, and you guys pulled out more than I did. If you sin and commit evil towards another, it is a sin against God. And that's, while we, we read about sin against others and making it right with Him, but the sin is against God. And I think that fleeing is a good one. At the end, how did he fare in prison? Same thing. He becomes the keeper of the prison, all that was committed into his hands. So we're going to pick up there next time. Alex, real quick, because Nick is looking at you with a glare now.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, with Joseph, whether he was actually tempted by Potiphar's wife or not, like, maybe he didn't actually have the desire to sleep with her, so he ran. But Jesus was tempted by Satan, and Satan says, like, hey, turn this rock into bread. I mean, are we saying that Jesus had the desire to eat that bread? I don't know, but we know that Jesus wasn't tempted, right? He didn't. I don't know if we're saying, like, was he tempted or not, or was the desire there? I mean,
But it was a way that we could learn to handle it. Like, yeah, I don't know that he would be tempted to bow down to Satan, but yet he was able to combat that and give us an example of how to.
Even though he didn't have the desire to bow down to Satan, he was still tempted in a way. So, like, Joseph may not have had that desire to be with Potiphar's wife, but the temptation was still there nonetheless.
Right. Whether he had that desire, they're okay. Yeah, I like that point. We're over time, but that was good. Thank you. Go ahead. All right, we'll see you guys next week. We'll continue on there.